Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So Yusatsu is not here, so we don't have announcements from our Shuso. And Koin is not here, but Koin will come back. She is actually here. She's just working on a different project momentarily. So you get me. Hello. Yeah, my main announcement is Koin's coming back. You don't have to have just me. You also get Koin. Does anyone else have an announcement or something that you're that's coming up that you're excited about? Yes, it's pretty boring around here.
Is there a Zazenkai on Saturday?
There is a Zazenkai on Saturday. Thanks, Dio. So a Zazenkai is a day of sitting. It starts at 5 a.m. and ends at 5 p.m. And there's mostly just Zazen, but also some Orioki. So that can be fun if you like a lot of Zazen. Maybe you do. You are here. Yeah, that's all. Oh, we have Sajiki at the end of October, which is cool. We're going to talk about that. And I do have an announcement about Sunday, which is why we're doing the class we're doing right now, which is that there will be a ceremony on Sunday called Two Ancestors, and Yukio's going to tell us about it a little while later. But it's tied to this class. So this class is intentionally being taught tonight so that you know about the ceremony on Sunday, and if you decide to come to the ceremony on Sunday, you'll have an idea of what is happening. So I'm curious about last week's prompt that you were left with. And Jitsuso will come around with the mic if you have anything you'd like to share. That's another reason to sit close together for Jitsuso. So you had two prompts last week. One was about considering your most important relationships and whether they're harmonious or difficult or both, how you might use the Eightfold Path to increase the harmoniousness or reflect on the difficulty or land on acceptance somehow. The other one that was offered was to take some bit of suffering and really investigate it using the Four Noble Truths. So I'm curious for any reflections there or anything from the last class that just has bubbled up for you over the past week.
Hi, I'm Benny. I was more reflecting on when I first learned about the Four Noble Truths. It was like in middle school. And when I encountered it first, I kind of realized, and then reflecting on now as I've been practicing, I noticed that there's this, when I first learned about the Four Noble Truths, I kind of took it away from it that it was kind of like a stoic value, or like to end suffering is to get rid of those desires, delusions, and everything. And that was kind of like difficult for me to comprehend in conjunction with the Eightfold Path, that feels like a great leap. And I think as I practice more, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more, I feel like there's more layers to it. And I think like for instance, the concept of the Bodhisattva, that really feels like that sort of bridge, especially when we think of the vows, the Bodhisattva vows, like to that we're connecting to others, that we're kind of sitting here to relieve not just the suffering of ourselves, but all suffering. And to meet that too. So I don't know if there's something that you want to add to that or.
Yeah, I think you said a lot of great things.
Great.
Thanks, Benny.
Thank you.
Thanks for your reflections.
Thanks. I kind of touched on my experience with reflecting this week, which was like kind of observing, I guess, my own suffering and clinging to things or pushing them away, and kind of having this difficult to bridge that with the Eightfold Path. Mm-hmm. Like it helped to observe, but then having these like, I guess, high-minded concepts were hard to kind of get a foothold, I guess.
Totally. Yeah, sometimes you're just stuck in suffering or stuck in noticing it. Any others? All right, then. Thank you. So, as mentioned, we are doing this class this week, which is on two of our ancestors, Dogen and Kazan. Ah, dang it, I forgot the thing. Oh, well. So Dogen is our ancestor in Soto Zen, who is credited with bringing Soto Zen from China to Japan. And Kazan is his descendant and our ancestor. Kazan is four after Dogen, who is sort of credited with enlarging the Soto school and spreading it. I think we might have mentioned, but maybe we didn't, that there are sort of two main flavors of Zen. Zen is a type of Mahayana Buddhism that developed first in China as Chan and then moved to Japan. One school is the Soto school, which was brought by Dogen, and the other is Rinzai, which was brought by Rinzai, or Linji is his Chinese name. And so there's some differences there, and we'll get into some of that next week. We'll talk about Theravada and Mahayana and Vajrayana. But Dogen and Kazan are really important in the Soto school because of the way that they sort of brought Soto Zen to Japan and expanded it throughout Japan. So every year, here at Dharma Rain, we pay tribute to these two ancestors with a ceremony called, surprise, Two Ancestors, which celebrates them. This is a really unique ceremony in Soto Zen because those are our two ancestors. And at many other Soto temples, it's a multi-day ceremony. Here, we do it just one day. So Yukio here is our lead sacristan, which means that she is in charge of sort of helping the ceremonies go smoothly. So she's going to give us a brief description of this ceremony. With the microphone.
With the microphone. Thank you. We have one. Hi, this is Yukio. When I was thinking about what might be interesting to share about this ceremony, I was thinking in broader strokes, it's one of our larger ceremonies, so it's got a lot of elements to it. And as with a lot of our ceremonies, there's sort of like an entry and an exit that sort of like opens the door and closes the door. So there'll be the priest who's leading the ceremony with attendants and the precentor who enter with like the ringing of the inkin. So kind of like bringing you in, inviting you in. And then several elements of this ceremony in particular really emphasize this kind of dance and coordination. And I feel like there's a lot of that that is inviting you to feel a connection with each other. And like the idea is feeling connected to these ancestors in this lineage. So there's like a specific orchestration of how the different people move with each other. So like in entering, there's supposed to be a moment when the lead priest and both their attendants like cross the center line of the hall at the same time. And then there's an element of the ceremony where we have two wooden plaques that they're called ihais. So one is for Dogen and one's for Kazan. And there's a bit of ceremony where they're moved from the side altar, which will have Bodhidharma on it, to the main altar, and to sort of build the feeling of, the taiko, the big drum back here, will have a pattern of beats that increases in volume. And I'm not sure if Reiju's going to give a demo.
No, she's doing something else.
I was like, that would be a different vibe. But
that'd be cool, huh?
Yeah, it'd be cool. But it's really stirring and connecting. And that also is supposed to coordinate with very specific movements up here. So again, like drawing you into this feeling of connection. And the same happens as we go through a chant. And then everyone processes through the hall. So everyone is moving through the hall together. And so those elements, I think, bring a sense of, like warmth and connectivity that I think is part of why the ceremony happens.
Thanks, Yukio. That was lovely. So the next thing, I'm going to pass out our handout for tonight, and we're going to talk a little bit about, I'm going to do a little bit of kind of comparing, contrasting of Dogen and Kazan. So, thank you. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Thank you. We'll give a minute to get those passed around to everybody. So there's really, I think, just a really kind of incredible synergy about Dogen and Kazan and some of these ways that they are different and what they did complemented each other so much. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. And this information, by the way, I want to give credit to it. It came from the Soto Zen Teachers Association about, it's probably been 15 years ago. Somebody in the Soto Zen Teachers Association created a whole study of Kazan, because we don't actually have a lot of writing about Kazan. We don't know nearly as much about him as we know about Dogen. And so they made this wonderful guide that's filled with articles, and there's a page that has this kind of comparison chart in it. And it's just so cool. I just think it's so cool. So Dogen was like the dignified father, and he was kind of stern. And Kazan was more like the compassionate mother, magnanimous progenitor, just we feel a very warm personality. In our echo for the two ancestors, we call Dogen the highest ancestor, because he built the basis of this empire, and some of this language comes from the Soto Shu, the Japanese Soto Zen kind of organization. And we call Kazan the greatest ancestor because he consolidated and expanded the empire. So, I don't need to read all the way through this, but you know, Dogen was very much interested in monasticism, and he was very philosophical. He took the Buddhist scriptures as personal philosophical questions to study and understand. He wasn't especially academic or objective, but he just took it like it was like really personal. And you know, as you may know from if you've read any of Dogen, sometimes his writing is impenetrable. It can be impenetrable. The difference for Kazan offered clear explanations and very accessible writing. And he offered practical application, relevance for daily life, and he adapted a lot of the ritual that Dogen had sort of produced and brought from China and sort of changed for Japan. Kazan actually adapted it so that it really fit for the masses, for lay people. So he was really like he was for the layman, and women. Yeah, I just haven't gotten that far yet. Yes, you know, while we think of Dogen as establishing the Soto school in Japan, like bringing this teaching from China and establishing it in Japan, he had one temple, he had one monastery. Kazan had like the administrative acumen to expand that and built like hundreds of temples and monasteries and took them like to villages so that, you know, regular old people had a place to go for their funerals and their, you know, birth dedications and that sort of thing. So, you know, if not for Kazan, Soto Zen probably, you know, I think about that, like if Kazan hadn't existed, Soto Zen might not exist now, because like he really like kept it, you know, made it go, and made it for all of us. Like, Dogen's Zen was very monastic. So both of them wanted women to be involved. Kazan made great efforts to encourage the training of women. He gave the first Dharma transmission to a Soto nun. I wrote here, Dogen was willing to offer readings, merit to lay donors. He said Zazen was for all people, but he didn't speak all that much about training lay people, whereas that was like Kazan's whole thing. It was about training lay people. He was very active in lay ordination, giving precepts to lay people. And yet, in the Denkaroku, he was clearly writing about the importance of monastic practice and the selection of successors. So, you know, he was holding both of those at the same time. So that's our little comparison of Dogen and Kazan. Next, I'm talking about Dogen.
Maybe Genjoku one.
Oh, read the thing? Okay. So on the back, I'm going to read this bit.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
They don't read it, they just
listen. Okay, so put your papers down and just listen. I'm going to read an excerpt of Dogen's, from the Shogo Genzo, from the fascicle called Genjo Koan. And I'm going to read it three times. When Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it is already sufficient. When Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. For example, when you sail out on a boat to the middle of an ocean where no land is in sight and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular and does not look any other way. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It is like a palace. It is like a jewel. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. All things are like this. When Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it is already sufficient. When Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. For example, when you sail out on a boat in the middle of an ocean where no land is in sight and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular and does not look any other way. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It's like a palace. It's like a jewel. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. All things are like this. When Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you think it is already sufficient. When Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. For example, when you sail out on a boat to the middle of an ocean where no land is in sight and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular and does not look any other way. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It's like a palace. It is like a jewel. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. All things are like this. I didn't. Okay. All right, so I actually didn't really talk about Dogen all that much. I just did that comparison bit. So, okay, 3 minutes. Dogen was a prolific writer. This is some, but not all, of Dogen's writing. Pretty hefty. We have not very much from Kazan. And, you know, one thing I was thinking about, it may be that it's not translated from Japanese. You know, there's been great efforts to translate Dogen into English, but we have very little translated from Kazan, which is, I just find interesting when he's the highest ancestor, right? So what I read to you is Genjo Koan, which is one of the fascicles in the Chobo Genzo. This is a series of essays that Dogen wrote throughout his practice career. He had an idea of compiling them in a certain way, and what we have now is not, I don't think, what he was thinking of, but I'm happy we have what we have, because he had like a smaller idea. It's 95 fascicles, I think it is. 95 different practice essays. Do I need to wrap it up now?
No.
Okay. Please continue. Okay. So that's that. And then this, I love this book as well. Well, I like them all. I like Dogen a lot. Dogen's extensive record. This is filled with like short talks that he gave in the Zendo while people were meditating, or little teishos that he gave. It's like short Dharma talks, lots and lots of short Dharma talks. Some poetry. He wrote a lot of poetry. And then this is his pure standards for the Zen community, which you all still have to study this, don't you? Yeah, you want to talk? I don't know, maybe you want to talk about that a little bit.
So this is, oh, I can have this.
You have to have that.
I have to have this. It's in the shinki. So this is Dogen's pure standards for the Zen community, also called the Eihei Shingi. Eihei is the name of his monastery and also one of his names. And it's like, here's how to be a monk, follow these rules. And I recently became a monk. And the year before I became a monk, I was a postulant. And while I was a postulant, I had to read a chapter of this book every day called the Taidai Koho, which is, here's how to be a monk. And it's got like, oh, I should know this by now, many rules, 67 maybe, to follow. And they are in particular how to comport oneself in the face of seniority. Like I was telling Coeen earlier that there's one that says, don't accidentally poke a senior when you get on the tan. And we don't have a tan here. A tan is a platform that is common at temples, but we don't have it here. And I didn't understand that until I went to a temple where I had to sit on a tan and sort of like jump to get on it. And I was like, oh no, I'm going to accidentally poke someone. So that's what this is. This is like rules for how to be a monk. The other text in here that I am really familiar with right now is called the Tenzo Kyokun, which is how to be the Tenzo, which is the person in charge of the kitchen. And I am the person in charge of the kitchen. So I'm reading that on a regular basis as well.
Yeah. All right, and then I think now we're gonna transition to you talking about Kaizen.
Yeah, we're gonna transition to me talking about Kaizen a little bit. Coeen already told us a bunch of great stuff about Kaizen. So basically what I'm gonna do is, she said, here's a bunch of stuff that Dogen wrote. Kaizen also wrote some stuff, although as she said, we have less of it. But the thing that he is most well known for writing is called the Denkuroku, which is stories of transmissions from teachers to students. So I'm going to do the same thing that Coeen did with a piece of the Genjo Koan and read you a piece from the Denkuroku from a chapter on the teacher Prajnatara, who is also called Hanyatara. That's her name when we chant her. And psych. There's good reason to think that Prajnatara is a woman. She's on our traditional ancestral line and is often thought of as a man. But one of our other ancestors, more recent, Jiyu Kennett, who is considered one of the founders of this temple, was really interested in finding women in our ancestral lines. And so she assigned one of her students to figure out if any of the people in our ancestral lines were actually women, because one of the ways that that gets erased is by saying, yeah, that was totally a dude. So Prajnatara is one who was quite likely a woman rather than a man, and she is the teacher of Bodhidharma, who is credited with bringing Buddhism from India to China, and Chan specifically, which as I said is the precursor to Zen. So again, I'll read this. Do you have it? I'll read this three times. It is on your sheet, so you can look at it later if you want. But really the point is just for you to hear some of Dogen and some of Kaizen, so you can sort of hear in their own voice some of the differences and some of the similarities, and get a little bit of the flavor of their different kinds of writing. So here's the excerpt from Denkuroku, the chapter on Prajnatara. Therefore, seeing today is seeing all time. Looking over the ages is guarding the present. The enlightened ones are born together with you and live together with me, without the slightest separation, accompanying us at all times. When you manage to arrive at this state, it is not something of past, present, or future. It is not a matter of sense objects or sense consciousnesses. That is why it is said that succession to the reality of Buddhism transcends time, that realization continuously pervades time. Because it is so, the golden needle and the jade thread pass through finely. When you look closely, which is other, which is self? Neither the frame nor the point shows. Here, everyone gets a seat, and it is always shared. Therefore, seeing today is seeing all time. Looking over the ages is guarding the present. The enlightened ones are born together with you and live together with me, without the slightest separation, accompanying us at all times. When you manage to arrive at this state, it is not something of past, present, or future. It is not a matter of sense objects or sense consciousnesses. This is why it is said that succession to the reality of Buddhism transcends time, that realization continuously pervades time. Because it is so, the golden needle and jade thread pass through finely. When you look closely, which is other? Which is self? Neither the frame nor the point shows. Here, everyone gets a seat, and it is always shared. Therefore, seeing today is seeing all time. Looking over the ages is guarding the present. The enlightened ones are born together with you and live together with me, without the slightest separation, accompanying us at all times. When you manage to arrive at this state, it is not something of past, present, or future. It is not a matter of sense objects or sense consciousnesses. This is why it is said that succession to the reality of Buddhism transcends time, that reality continuously pervades time. Because it is so, the golden needle and jade thread pass through finely. When you look closely, which is other? Which is self? Neither the frame nor the point shows. Here, everyone gets a seat, and it is always shared. So part of what Keizan is talking about there is what we call transmission. And the story is that this happens face-to-face from teachers to students. And the story is also that this goes back individual relationship to individual relationship all the way to Shakyamuni Buddha. And this is the purpose of Keizan's text, is to tell some of these stories about how teachers and students formed relationships. And often if you read a single story, it involves at least three relationships: the teacher of the teacher and the student, the teacher themselves and the student. In fact, most of this one on Prajnatara is on Prajnatara's teacher, Punyamitra. And Bodhidharma is not mentioned, but we know that Bodhidharma is Prajnatara's student. So it's really about relationships and the way that they inform practice and the way that they create Zen, the way that they create enlightenment together. So I brought this document, which is called a Kechimyaku. If you've taken the precepts, it looks familiar, maybe. And what this is I've got two, actually, and I'll pass them around. It's a paper document that demonstrates this lineage that Keizan is writing about that goes through all of the ancestors. There's something like 96. You'll all get to know my old name. So I'll pass it around, but you see this red line? That's the bloodline that goes through all of our teachers and all of our students, and it comes all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. So what Keizan is saying about, like, all of it's happening all at once, we're all sharing a seat, this is part of what he's referring to. So all of the names of the ancestors are on here, and the line runs through them. And at the end is my name, and it comes back. There's also this one, which is a little bit different in that it's not the traditional line, but rather the women's line. So it lists all the names of the women ancestors who don't have a bloodline running through them, because a lot of them were overlooked in various ways, and this isn't a full list. But here's who we've got. So those can go around and take their time going around. You can look at them. And we'll start an activity. Ah, oh, dang it, I forgot that too.
We don't have stuff to write with.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have to shift it up a little bit.
We're going to have to shift it up a little bit. So what I hoped that we could do, before I forgot everything, was draw our own catchy miyakus of the face-to-face transmissions, whether in a formal teacher-student relationship or otherwise, whether a literal bloodline like biological ancestors or otherwise, that brought us to this place today. But I forgot to bring paper or things to write with. So instead, maybe we could get, well, let's do it this way. Let's have 5 minutes and you can reflect. Who are some of the people who I would put in my catchy miyaku? What have I learned from these various bloodlines, whether they're in formal teacher-student relationships or literal biological bloodlines or other types of relationships that have really informed the way that I show up here today? Notice they don't have to be harmonious relationships. Those can also bring us here and are an important part of our ancestry. So maybe take about, I'll give you 4-ish minutes to reflect on one of those relationships that feels like important to what brought you here. And also think about like how you might share that. You don't have to share all of it. You get to choose any part of it you share or any part of it you don't share. But spend some time reflecting. Who are some of my ancestors? What story would I tell about them if I were to write my own Denkaroku?
I have paper.
Great. If you have some paper, you can use it. Okay. So now what I'd like you to do is find a group of maybe 3 to 5 other people, including Andy at the back, and share with your group your story, that if you were to write a story about this ancestor and about their transmission to you, what would you include? And again, you can choose which details you want to share and which you want to keep to yourself. And while you're sharing, maybe each person gets 2 minutes, ish, because we'll have different size groups. And then everyone can listen, and then it will be someone else's turn. So no questions, just sharing and listening. Yeah? All right, so go ahead and find yourself in groups of about 4. And the catchy miyakus are still going around, and that's fine, or you can bring them up here. So for this week, if you like, and I will ask you next week too, here's a prompt for you to consider. The activity sort of focused on Keizan, so the prompt sort of focuses on Dogen. In Genjo Koan, Dogen says, "But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. All things are like this." What is something in your life that you can start to see like this? Maybe a relationship, yourself, career or work experience. How does this statement from Dogen help you shift your understanding of something in your own life? All things are like this. Any last comments or questions in 1 minute before we switch to Vespers?
why not Japan?
Yeah. You want to take that one, or shall I?
Which?
Fukan Zazengi. In both India and China.
Oh, go ahead.
So that text is called Fukan Zazengi, and it was written by Dogen, one of his many writings, and it was one of the first things he wrote when he came back from China. And so at that point, the Zen could be traced through India and China, but it hadn't yet started in Japan. Yes.
He was starting it.
He was starting it in Japan.
One thing I didn't get to say, that piece of writing was the first thing that he wrote. He went to China and studied and brought stuff back with him, and Fukan Zazengi was the first thing he wrote.
Now it could say, list all of the countries.
The whole world.
The whole world, yeah. Okay, so we will shift to Vespers.